Well, good afternoon and good morning to you all. My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of my colleague, Professor Syed Zatar, I would like to welcome you to the Voices of Chica teleclass, Part 2 in 2011. And it is a great honor to have you with us and to be able to host this teleclass sponsored by the Chica Board and several corporations. On slide number 2, you'll see the great companies that help us make this a free teleclass, and in fact, all of these companies support teleclass education in a greater way, and I would like to thank Virox and Deb and 3M and Diversey and Gojo and Ecolab. They've all done great things for infection control education, and I am very grateful to them. On slide number 3, you see the agenda for today. It's starting with a board update, that being by Donna Weens. And Donna is not in Canada. Donna is, in fact, in the United Kingdom on vacation following the Infection Prevention Society conference where she attended last week. So to start us off, you'll see a picture of Donna on slide number 4. And Donna, I would like to invite you to present the Chica board update.
Thank you, Paul. Welcome, everyone, from the Board of Directors of Chica Canada. I am pleased to be able to speak with you today, even though I'm not in Canada myself. The focus of my slides today will be an overview of the activities of the association since our last Voices of Chica teleclass in the spring. I'll be structuring the update around the strategic goals of Chica so that we can all understand how the board, the chapters, and staff and our many dedicated volunteers are moving us forward. I won't have time to cover every objective and strategy in the 2010 to 15 strategic plan, so I encourage those of you who are members to check out the full plan in the members area of our website. The following slides show many of the ways in which each goal is being achieved. I'll highlight one or two new or progressing initiatives for each goal. Next slide, please. Chica's first goal is to raise awareness of the association and its activities. This goal is achieved in many ways. Raising our profile with our own membership occurs using the monthly e-newsletter, sending informational e-broadcasts through the quarterly journal, using teleconferences for chapter executives, and of course, through these Voices of Chica Weber teleclasses. Raising Chica's profile external to the association happens through attendance and exhibits at conferences. Paul mentioned that I attended the Infection Prevention Society conference recently, and in many other ways tied to Goal 5, which I'll talk about shortly. A highlight this year was Chica's acceptance as an associate member of the Canadian Nurses Association. This will hopefully lead to greater awareness of the CIC designation and possibly official recognition of infection control certification by CNA in the future. Next slide. Goal 2 is to enhance the mix of products and services available for our members. In the bustle of our everyday work, it's easy to overlook the contribution that Chica is making to us as a resource and coordinating mechanism. The member and source guide has been around for years, as have postings for jobs and conferences on the website, but these resources are continually being enhanced. Increasingly, Chica partners with other groups and product vendors to provide resources for our members. Highlights this year include the website renewal and expansion in the spring and updating of the Chica chat discussion board. The toolkit continues to grow, the audit toolkit, and to be developed and is attracting international attention. This resource is really a testament to Chica member volunteers and committees, which are supported by the association. Next slide. Goal 3 to expand the association's education initiatives. And this is a main focus for our group. Canada has endorsed several novice education courses which provide basic infection prevention and control curriculum. Our chapters sponsor education events, we host road shows, webinars, and of course the annual education conference. You know that the 2012 conference will be held in my hometown, Saskatoon, followed by Ottawa in 2013 and Halifax in 2014. Our long-standing relationship with Virox continues as they support attendance at the conference for several attendees each year. Highlights of progress toward Goal 3 achievement are the redevelopment and full implementation of Chica's distance education course. This has been a tremendous amount of work by Donna Moralejo and her hardworking team, but it's already very popular with a waiting list into next year. Another major project is the development of a 6-module routine practices e-learning tool with a planned launch in October. This will provide a consistent mechanism for routine practices education to flow into all kinds of healthcare environments in Canada. The last bullet here notes a collaborative effort underway to put more detail around the core competencies of infection preventionists and infection control professionals in North America. The work builds on existing professional and practice standards document. Next slide. Goal 4 is to expand and develop the membership base. Chica continues to experience membership growth as well as growth in the number of chapters and interest groups. Board members have been visiting chapters in an effort to retain and further expand our membership by promoting interest and engagement. The highlight here is the member recognition initiatives that have been developed over the years. Most recently, the Champions of Infection Prevention and Control, now in its third year of celebrating exceptional contribution, and the increasing emphasis on and recognition of member certification. We're now seeing publication of graduate names twice a year in our journal. Next slide. This is a busy one. Goal 5, to provide national and international leadership, is the main focus of the Board of Directors, but also involves many Chica members directly. I know this slide is far too full and contains too many acronyms, but in many ways it is an indication of how many ways Chica is connected to other organizations in Canada and other countries. Establishing, building, and maintaining relationships is so important to the credibility of Chica and to its infection control professionals. Collectively, this long list of organizations and groups work to improve patient care and to prevent infections around the world. And while these are all important connections in some way, this year our focus has been on the Public Health Agency of Canada, improving relations and communications with them, and on the Operating Room Nurses of Canada and First Nations and Inuit Health Branch as emerging partners. As I mentioned, these relationships are important to us all, but they also take a long time, much of it volunteer time, by board members and others. Furthering relationships also costs some money, because often, if Chica is to be represented, our organization must pay to have our member present. Not all business can be done by conference call. Sometimes we need a live person in the room. Next slide, please. As though the initiatives already underway are not enough, there are many others in the wings or under discussion. Some of these are objectives in the strategic plan, and others are work that members have suggested would benefit them and their practice. The highlight here is the first bullet, revitalization of the ESBL toolkit, which is much needed in this age of carbapenemase-resistant gram-negative bacteria. The working group for this project is finalized, and work will begin very soon as a joint effort with APIC. So many things to work on, so few resources to move us forward. But But what a wonderful job we've done collectively to this point, less than 2 years into our five-year plan. I know there are great developments yet to come. We have hardworking volunteers on the board of directors, chapter executives. We have enthusiastic and knowledgeable staff and members who want the association to move forward. That's a recipe for success. Well, I think that's about the end of my time. So back to you, Paul, and on to the next Chica voice.
Donna, thank you very much. Now, on to the next slide, and you'll see the smiling face of Anne
Balahowski.
Thank you very much, Anne. Anne was a big star last week at the IPS conference in the UK. She gave us the British version of Chica Canada. She gave the opening keynote address and to rapturous applause. She is the immediate past president of Chica Canada, and she will give the update on the 2012 conference. Anne.
It's a good thing I'm doing this by teleconference because everybody would see my very red blushing face. Anyway, thank you for that, Paul. So my job now is to really tell you about the work of the conference planning committee. So I am but one of a large group of people who have been working very hard behind the scenes to bring another engaging and exciting conference. Next year's conference will be in June. So that's a little different for us. We usually have it in May. So we are moving into June. So it'll be June 16th to 21st. Our host city is Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and whenever I'm asking speakers to come, I love to tell them that it's the Paris of the prairies. I've never been, but I have read some really nice things about Saskatoon, and I'm very excited to go. Our host chapter is SaskPIC, and for those of you who were at our conference this year, you will see how incredibly enthusiastic they are about Saskatchewan, and definitely of their football team and the color green. So they're very much looking forward to hosting this conference. It will be their first ever in Saskatchewan. Our theme is Growing for the Future, which really is apropos given that Saskatchewan is one of our breadbaskets for Canada. On to the next slide. So in terms of some of the things that are going to be covered, we will, again, next year have a Novice and Advanced Practitioner Day. They were very well received at this year's conference, as they have been in the past. We have had some discussion about changing the format and perhaps not offering the Novice and Advanced Practitioner Day at our conference, but doing it in other ways through webinars. But we will be having it for sure in 2012. There are a number of workshops, so there is going to be a long-term care workshop, a pediatric workshop, and I'll let Alexis and Nicole tell you about the cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization workshop, which is definitely it looks like the agenda is got some really interesting and new and emerging information that we all don't want to miss. We will have a keynote. For next year will be what do executives need to make infection prevention and control a priority. So we're just finalizing our speaker for that and are quite excited about having a CEO from a big organization come and talk about how they support infection prevention and control. We're also going to, in our closing, we'll have HumaCloud come from Patient Safety and Canadian Patient Safety Organization, and he's going to talk about storytelling and infection prevention. And I don't know if you've ever heard Hugh speak, but he is definitely quite passionate about patient safety and is a very articulate storyteller. So I think that will be a very interesting session. One of the other things on our next slide that I did want to mention and really do make a difference in terms of the number of folks and the focus on our champions are Virox scholarships. So, again, a big hat off to Virox and their partners for all of the support they have given to CHICA over the years and to our individual members. I know that last year we had over 30 applicants, and we're able to send quite a number of those folks who may not otherwise have had an opportunity to go and have education to attend the CHICA conference. So they have made a substantial contribution, not just in money, but in I think you can't quantify the folks, the benefits that they get from being at the conference. The other, and Donna mentioned it as well, is our 3M Breakfast of Champions for Infection Prevention and Control. We will be reviewing the requirements for that, actually tomorrow. And so I would recommend that you look around at your peers, and there are so many amongst our group who truly are champions. And and in fact, one of the things that we said as we were reviewing the VIROC scholarships is that many of those folks who are applying for VIROC scholarships certainly have many of the qualities, if not all of the qualities, that you would expect to see in a champion. Okay, and on to the next slide, our special event, and Jerry always does such an amazing job of finding a special event that is true to the place that we're going and lets you get a flavor of that province. So she's done it again. So this time it's called A Walk Through Time. We'll be at the Saskatoon Western Development Museum. There will be a barbecue dinner followed by dancing. So you'll get to walk through the museum, and Jerry says there's a store at the end. So for those of you who like to shop, that there'll also be an opportunity for that as well. But it'll give us some of the history in that in the museum. So I thought that was very, very interesting. So those are just a few of the tidbits of the things that you're going to see at the conference in 2012. I'm getting more excited as we continue to meet and flesh out what the program will look like. And I think that we'll offer a true educational opportunity and a network opportunity for our membership. So thank you very much. And on to the next voices of CHICA.
Thank you very much, Anne. On to the next, as you say. This featuring Alexis Silverman and Nicole Kenny. This is the update on the 2012 biannual Virox Day on cleaning, disinfection, and sterilization. And Alexis and Nicole are both with us. Who's starting? Is it Nicole or Alexis?
It's Nicole.
Nicole, carry on.
Yep. Great. Thanks, Paul. Welcome, everybody, to the Voices of CHICA, and both Alexis and I are really excited to share the topics of the second biannual Virox Cleaning, Disinfection, Sterilization Symposium. What we did this year in trying to help determine what type of topics we wanted to look at or what were of interest to everyone across Canada was in March of this year, we did send out a survey to all the CHICA membership, and we got quite a great response, and I thank everyone for that. And so what we did from that is started to review the feedback and try to capture really some of the top areas of interest. And so that's what we're going to start discussing the next few slides. I'm gonna, if Alexis is there, I'll let her move on to the next slide.
Sure. Thanks, Nicole. So what we're looking at for topics is that we've divided the topics up into two different slides. Ones are with confirmed speakers, and the other ones is that we're still just trying to get confirmation from some of the people that we've approached. But for our first, for the confirmed topics, the first one we're looking at is green cleaning. Is the concept mutually exclusive? And it's because of the fact that, as everyone is aware, cleaning for health has increased in importance in recent years. And there's so many different marketing sectors who are looking at using green and clean cleaning chemicals. That was really hard to say. So education and governmental services are two of the most notable ones. So the use of safer and greener cleaners and disinfectants is also gaining momentum in the healthcare sector. And what our presentation is going to be looking at is can you actually figure out what the claims are of the product so that you can choose something that will do both, which is one, to clean and disinfect the way you need it to, and the other one is to make sure that it is as green as it says. There will be a discussion of how to choose these green products that are certified and a discussion of greenwashing so we can make the difference. And then Number two is the role of the environment in infection transmission, and we have Dr. Satir, who's confirmed for this, anyone who's seen him present before will know that he's a very effective speaker, so we're quite excited to have him back. So we're looking at the role of the environment in infection transmission, and as discussed in the previous statement, we've seen a greater focus on research and how the environment is in part responsible for infection transmission and the role that cleaning and disinfection plays in stopping the spread of infections. So Dr. Satir will review the currently published data, including a discussion on different types of surfaces and how they directly affect transmission. Our third confirmed speaker is Mark Heller, who's a former VP of Environmental Services with Alberta Health, and he's talking about environmental services quality assurance programs. And so the note that Nicole has is for thanks to the work of Dr. Philip Carling and other researchers, this has taken on a lot more value and importance, and the idea of auditing to assure environmental cleaning is become one of the most prominent topics that we have noticed in the realm of environmental services. So the session will review the use of UV reflective markers, the use of ATP monitors, as well as a discussion of other quality indicators. And then the third one is alternative disinfection technologies with Dr. Dick Zoutman. And anyone who's ever been to a Chica conference knows how good a presenter Dr. Zoutman is. So once again, we're also very thrilled to have him there. And so we're looking at alternate disinfection technologies. And these are the people who come knocking at your door, approach you at the conferences from their booth saying, hey, we have the latest and greatest. And the trick is figuring out, okay, what is good and effective and what is the stuff that maybe requires a bit more development. So we're looking at the evaluation of the usefulness of such technologies and how do we implement them into our day-to-day cleaning programs. And so, Nicole, do you want to take the next slide?
Sure, thanks. So if everybody moves to the next slide, we'll see the next three topics. And what we're doing this year is also we've shortened the session by one because one of the comments back in the last years is the run for IFIC is a bit too early, so we're going to start an hour later so that everybody can have an extra hour to sleep in. But with the next topics that we're still kind of confirming speakers, one area that really got highlighted was the discussion of different antimicrobial, and we're calling it stuff, whether it's antimicrobial coatings that we're seeing being applied to fabrics or embedded into different surfaces, and even what we see with different soaps and stuff. So it's kind of that new area where, like the room decontamination devices, there's a number of different products out there. There's lots of discussion on these, whether we're talking antimicrobial patient privacy room dividers to antimicrobial embedded toilet seats. And what we can do, how can we choose or review these things from an infection control perspective? Certainly it's difficult because there's not a significant amount of data to support their use currently, but certainly there's a lot of interest, and so we're hoping to try to discuss the different types of coatings, the testing requirements, and to achieve how the different claims get achieved and what we need to look at if facilities decide to choose them. The sixth topic for the day will be on prion spores and parasites. And again, just from a review of what this looks like from the fun challenges of reprocessing heat-sensitive medical devices, how do we ensure that instruments are free of these challenging bugs, and what are some facilities doing to try to ensure that cleaning and disinfection protocols of semi-critical or critical devices are covering that. In the last one that people were quite interested in was with respect to biofilms. Similar to prion spores or parasites, these are quite a challenge with respect to reprocessing medical devices, and certainly the few facilities where we've even got biofilms in our sinks, there's things that we need to think about. So we're really trying to review how biofilms are formed and how we can ensure that the cleaning and disinfection processes, particularly for semi-critical and critical devices, are minimized to help reduce the risk of biofilm growth. So we hope that everyone finds those topics interesting. As we said, we're waiting for confirmation from a few speakers, but we're always interested in if anybody has recommendations of who they would like to hear speak at next year's conference, we're happy to listen to that. So that kind of covers the next sections, and as Paul said, if there's time or if people would send emails if they have any specific speakers, we'd love to hear back from everyone.
It is a fabulous thing to announce that Chica is growing by the measure of one chapter. Our 22nd chapter has just been born. That is Chica Simcoe Muskoka. And to let us know who and where that chapter is, we have Mandy Deves. Mandy, over to you.
Hi, good afternoon. So I'm Mandy Deves. I'm an infection control consultant with the North Simcoe Muskoka Regional Infection Control Network. And I've also been acting as the temporary chairperson for the new Chica Simcoe Muskoka chapter. So first I'm going to start off with a bit of information about our geography and some of the healthcare-related characteristics of our region. The North Simcoe Muskoka LIN has a population of 453,000, representing 3.5% of Ontario's population. We encompass the district of Muskoka, most of the county of Simcoe, and a portion of Grey County. So some of the cities in this area are Barrie, Collingwood, Midland, Muskoka, and Orillia and their surrounding areas. We are home to four First Nations, seven hospitals, 26 long-term care homes, one public health unit, one CCAC. We have 31 community support service agencies, three community health centers, and nine community mental health agencies. And we've also got some nurse practitioner-led clinics opening up in the near future. So we have, we're located around cottage country, so we also experience significant seasonal variation in our population and demands on health care. And we are also an increasingly popular retirement destination. So just to give an idea of sort of the areas that we represent. Over the years, we've heard members in our area express interest in starting up a local chapter. We have good infection control representation in our area, many of whom were Chica members, but due to distance, weather, time, those kinds of issues, haven't been able to be very involved in the chapters that they belong to. So in December, we put a call out for interest among our ICPs plus other people that were interested in infection control in our area, and received very good feedback and a lot of interest. So what we did was plan a teleconference in the spring to discuss what would be involved with starting up a chapter and maintaining a chapter. And we did a lot of calling around to different chapters that we had members involved in, just to talk to them and find out what they went through with starting up a chapter. So that was very helpful. The volunteers that attended that first teleconference participated in a working group, and we put together our chapter application. So the first thing we did after reviewing the chapter development manual, which was very helpful, and all the application forms, was send out a survey to a wide range of our stakeholders looking for input into terms of reference and how involved they wanted to be, how often they wanted to meet, and really just find out who even knew what Chica was. So we sent it out to about 100 people. We got 43 people that participated, which was we were very happy with. 90% of those people were familiar with Chica Canada, and 40% of those people were currently members of Chica Canada. So the different chapters that were represented were TPIC, Chica Pana, QPIC, and Central East Ontario. So, but the other good thing there was that 60% of people weren't currently Chica members. So we had a really good opportunity to be able to present some information about what the benefits of being a Chica member would be. So our application was submitted in June at the National Conference and was approved. And we had our first meeting on September 19th. We had really good representation at this meeting. We had 40 people come out. There was a mix of acute care, long-term care, community nursing, and public health, first responders as well. And we were really lucky that Jim Gauthier was planning a tour of chapters at the same time, so we were very fortunate to have him come in and speak to people about the benefits of Chica membership. He also did a talk that was targeted at long-term care and infection control issues for the elderly. So it was nice, because what we really want to try and encourage in our area is community and long-term care participation. Most of the people who are currently members are in acute care. So got really good feedback from that session. Opportunity to do some question and answers. And our plans for the future are to do our nomination and election process for Junito. We have a working group that's actually meeting this afternoon to develop how we're going to do this process. And our elections are going to be held on our next meeting, which is scheduled for November 23rd. So by the end of November, we hope to be able to submit our executive representation to CICA and move forward in January with our executive in place. And that's it.
Good. Thank you very much, Mandy. And congratulations on that. It's probably a much larger undertaking than I can even think to start a whole new chapter like that. But congratulations. It's a really good thing for all of us. And thank you very much. Next on the agenda is Dr. Alexander Mera. I first ran into this man's name when I read an article in the American Journal of Infection Control a year or more ago, I think, and I invited him to join Voices of CICA earlier this year, but he wasn't able. Now, Dr. Mera is a comparatively young man, although you wouldn't know it looking at his body of work. He has a whole lot of publications to his name. His speaking engagements are numerous. His reputation has superseded him in a really tremendous way. In fact, I've read no fewer than 5 articles in recent journal publications just in the last couple of months that reference his work. And at the IPS conference last week, there was one person who referenced his work from the podium and one who referenced his work in a poster presentation. He is from the Hospital Israelita Albert Einstein, Sao Paulo, Brazil. And to get an idea of just a comparison, Brazil is an enormous country with a few population centers and a lot of rural areas. Canada is an enormous country with a few population centers and a lot of rural areas. And I'm very excited to be able to have Dr. Mera join us today and to talk to us about infection control and prevention in Brazil. Alexander, over to you.
Okay, thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you so much for your kind words in respect of my person. And I will try to show something about infection control and prevention in Brazil that you are performing in Albert Einstein, our hospital. It's a Jewish hospital in São Paulo, Brazil. And I really appreciate Dr. Paul Weber for this opportunity for sharing with you some of these points for infection control. Next slide, please. My first slide is for showing a publication in Annals of Internal Medicine about device-associated nosocomial infections in more than 50 intensive care units of 80 developing countries. Next slide, please. And Brazil is one of these countries: Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, India, Mexico, Morocco, Peru, and Turkey. Next slide, please. You can look in this graphic. It's a high rate of nosocomial bloodstream infection per 1,000 central venous catheter days in all of these 8 countries. And comparing the mean of these countries with the U.S. data, it's tremendous high, more four times of the rates considering these 8 countries with the U.S. data. And there are a lot of work to do. It's a huge work, room for improvement, certainly. Next slide, please. We have several sources of information, guidelines, recommendations, CDC, APIC, SHE, Canadian, Brazilian Society, and beginners need a tutorial. We have some problems in Brazil: presence, distance, burden. Next slide, please. There is a very nice publication from Dr. Eduardo Medeiros, our head of the infectious disease division from our university, Federal University of São Paulo, a national experience on e-learning and infection control. Two courses, 5 modules, 20 days each. In 2 years, 100 of students, 3 media, exclusive online for orientation, giving internet about the healthcare associated infection, introduction, some books, several CDs, 5 tutors with medical doctors and infection control nurses for helping them. It's free, and students were selected by local sanitary authority. Next slide, please. It's this slide is in Portuguese, but it's only for showing the five modules, giving introduction about healthcare associated infection, introduction about antimicrobial stewardship, hand hygiene, and contact precautions, and other themes related to infection control. This next slide, please. The CD room, it's only for show you that when these students make the inscription, they have access to these CD rooms. And this is the web page showing the introduction about healthcare associated infection and all there is a lot of opportunities for many knowledge about this subject. And there is Brazil, a huge country. Brazil is a country with more than 100 million inhabitants and a total surface area larger than 1,500,000 square kilometers. In addition to its large area, the country has heterogeneous socio-demographic indicators with welfare regions concentrated in the southern part of the country. And São Paulo is in this area, and this was the study coordination, giving instructions for these medical students. Next slide, please. Microbiology. Basically, in Brazil, clinical microbiology has not been recognized as a priority by government agencies. There is a lack of trained laboratory personnel, and it's very important to maintain this integration in epidemiology and the microbiology. Next slide, please. Some reasons for conducting antimicrobial susceptibility surveillance, and that's the reason that we tried to develop a surveillance study, the Brazilian study group that I will show in the next few minutes. And this reason was to determine the level of resistance in a particular geographic region. Another reason is to improve the quality of empirical antimicrobial therapy, to educate all those involved in use of antimicrobials, and to direct infection control efforts in prevention of the spread resistant organisms, and to monitor changes in resistant patterns. Although the majority of the population depends on the public health care system, an increasing fraction is being managed by private facilities. And this heterogeneity is also reflected in health care praxis at the level of nosocomial infection management. As a result, different patterns of antimicrobial resistance and antimicrobial use may emerge with the country. Also, due to its increased intrinsic characteristics, etiologic agents, and their respective antimicrobial susceptibilities may differ from the data in other countries. And next slide. And that's the reason for the Brazilian SCOPE program. This program is similar to the U.S. SCOPE, that was developed 10 years ago. In the Brazilian scope, we have clinical data prospectively collected using standardized case report form, and the inclusion criteria was the healthcare-associated bloodstream infection. We had 16 hospitals in our study, public hospitals, private hospitals, academic and non-academic hospitals. Next slide, please. And I'm showing you that is our database by web that all the coordinators were able to put in this data according age, gender, diagnosis, risk factors, bacteria or fungi, and antimicrobial susceptibilities. Next slide, please. The SCOPE study Brazil, it was performed in 3 years, almost 3 years, more than 2,500 infections. 95% were monomicrobial infections. In these 16 participating hospitals, with a mean age 50 years old, the majority of our patients male, more than half, and half of these patients acquired a nosocomial bloodstream infection in the ICU setting. Next slide, please. A knowledge of the Brazilian data is of paramount importance for determining regional and national prevention and treatment strategies for nosocomial infection. Unlike previous national wide network surveillance studies, the Brazilian SCOPE study was very similar to the U.S. SCOPE study. But if you can look at that in the microorganisms, you can see that there is more than a half of gram-negatives in our study, more than gram-positive. One quarter of our patients have malignance as an underlying condition. The potential risk factors, the three majors, were central venous catheter in 70%, urinary catheter and ventilators, and a high rate of mortality, 40% in these patients. It's comparing with U.S. data, it's very high. U.S. data was 27%. Next slide, please. And considering the distribution of pathogens, the rank order of the five major pathogens shows that Staph aureus was the principal organism responsible for these nosocomial bloodstream infections, 15%, followed in rank by coagulase negative staphylococci, 13.4%, Klebsiella, Acinetobacter, and Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Next slide, please. And considering these three gram-negatives, Klebsiella, Acinetobacter, Balmani, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, antibiotic resistance within the group of these gram-negatives is worrisome, especially regarding Pseudomonas aeruginosa and Acinetobacter rates as high as 56% resistance to carbapenems for Acinetobacter and 35% for Pseudomonas aeruginosa are among the highest in the world's literature and have several implications for clinical practice, since resistance to carbapenems is usually associated with multi-drug resistance and very few options remain viable for the clinicians. Next slide, please. Another important difference is the higher prevalence of non-abacus candida in the Brazilian cohort. Although greater use of fluconazole is a possible explanation, the Brazilian cohort had a higher percentage of infections due to candida parapsilosis, 24% versus 11% of all candida infections. And this, it's important to mention, this could reflect less than optimal care for central lines in the Brazilian cohort, since the association of Candida parapsilosis with catheter-related bloodstream infection is well documented. Next slide, please. And the last part of my talk is about positive deviance. We are working with improving hand hygiene compliance in our ICU and in our step-down units. The beginning of our project about hand hygiene was in 2007 when we decided to apply the feedback methodology. Putting electronic hand wash counters in all of the dispensers of the SGU rooms, we applied this methodology for 6 months in the East unit versus the West unit. The West unit was our control. The feedback only giving the numbers for the healthcare workers and show them that they are using 50 or 100 or 200 times the alcohol gel product, and our measure was performed by the electronic hand wash counters. And we had the consumption of alcohol gel consumption in liters per 1,000 patient days. The feedback was not a very good methodology because there was no increase in hand hygiene compliance in the step-down unit. This happened in 2007. Then, in 2008, we decided to change the strategy. We decided to apply another methodology for improving hand hygiene compliance. And this methodology was the positive deviance. Our first contact with positive deviance was through reading these two books written by Atul Gawande, a surgeon from the Mass General Hospital, Better and Complications, these two books. I received the recommendation to read these books from Dr. Miguel Senderolo, our medical director of Albert Einstein, São Paulo, Brazil. This was our first contact. Of course, that after these two books, we searched Google and found the Positive Deviance Initiative. Next slide. And according to the Positive Deviance Initiative, positive deviance is based on the observation that in every community there are certain individuals or groups whose uncommon behaviors and strategies enable them to find better solutions to problems than their peers, while having access to the same resources and facing similar or worse challenges. Positive deviance, pioneered by Jerry and Monique Sterling from the Tufts University in Boston, they created the Positive Deviance Initiative, has been used worldwide to combat such intractable problems as childhood malnutrition, sex trafficking of girls, and poor infant health, and has more recently been applied to the serious problem of healthcare-associated infection, especially those due to methicillin-resistant staph aureus, MRSA. Next slide. And we can show you the web page of the Positive Deviance Initiative. Each balloon with different colors is an area that Positive Deviance is working. Next slide, the Positive Deviance, comparing the traditional approach versus Positive Deviance, if you have a pyramid, you have from the top, the leadership takes the decision. That's the traditional approach. And the manager implements decisions. Healthcare workers need to put them in practice and rarely are involved in the decision of how the work should be done. Considering hand hygiene, our strategy was putting in charge positive deviance. Healthcare workers now decide how to work should be done and promote the discovery among his peers what is the best solutions for putting hand hygiene in practice for improving hand hygiene compliance in our setting, the step-down units and in the ICU. And the leadership and the managers support filtering ideas and removing barriers to the implementation of best practices in our situation for improving hand hygiene compliance. Next slide, please. The positive evidence, a new strategy for improving hand hygiene compliance. That's our publication that Dr. Weber told you. We performed in step-down units. East unit was the interventional unit, and the west unit, our control unit. Three phases, a pre-intervention, implementation of PD strategy in one unit, comparing with the other unit, and the third phase, PD applied in both units. And the healthcare-associated surveillance performed by trained infection control nurse. Next slide, please. The positive deviance approach in Albert Einstein Hospital is the meeting of all healthcare workers twice per month. They have the opportunity to express their feelings about hand hygiene. They need to improve, and there is a very nice experience because they can share all the experience about hand hygiene. Monthly, the healthcare-associated infection rates were shown to this healthcare-associated infection. They identify the positive deviance, healthcare workers, they identify each other, and so forth, are those who wanted to change and develop new ideas for improving hand hygiene. They are very creative. They edit many videos about hand hygiene, and they discuss what is the better strategy for encouraging doctors, nurses, physical therapists during the practice, during the real life in the SGU rooms. Next slide, please. And this is one example of our meetings. The participation in one of these meetings of the head of the ICU and our CEO giving important contributions for improving hand hygiene in the step-down unit. Next slide, please. And I'm showing you one of the ideas that we find out in our meetings. X-ray technician, they decided to put a alcohol gel dispenser and the mobile X-ray machines in the ICU setting, and now his idea was spread out for all the hospitals. Next slide, please. And this is our results, a brief result. Comparing the intervention unit during the second phase with the control unit, more than 100 of alcohol gel aliquot dispensed per month, comparing with the control unit, the west unit. And this provoked a reduction in our healthcare, on the healthcare associated infections, in almost 50%. Next slide, please. And in our SU, we are performing the getting to zero strategy for fighting with VEP, BSI, and UTI. We are applying the bundles. Patients have many needs, not only for the infection control, and developing areas much in need, different bundles. And in this situation, next slide, we are showing the first program in 2007-2008, our bundle compliance and the ventilator-associated pneumonia rate per 1,000 ventilator days in our ICU in 2007 to 2008. And when we reached more than 95% of compliance for the bundle, that bundle, the bed elevation and stop sedation, we had the success. But it's important to mention that we incorporated the oral decontamination with chlorhexidine and the continuous aspiration of subglottic secretions, the CAS and the tracheal tubes, during these months. And in 2011, we had only 2 VEPs, and in 2010, 4 VEP cases. And for finishing my talk, Next slide, please. My conclusions. Nationwide surveillance studies are important, principally in developing countries as Brazil. A high prevalence of gram-negative versus gram-positive bacteria and a high rate of antibiotic resistance was found in the Brazilian scope. A high prevalence of non-albicans candida also was found in this study. Infection control policies are necessary, and the culture of accountability and the positive deviance must ever, ever exist in our scenario. And thank you so much for this opportunity, for showing you our data.
Dr. Mara, thank you very much. You really are on the cutting edge of many of these things, the positive deviance and the bundling and the checklists. These are things that many of us in Canada are really just getting into and working around the edges of, and you look like you've dove right into them and made them work for you. Congratulations on that. To everyone, if you'd like to hear more on the process that Dr. Mara used to improve hand hygiene compliance at his facility, he is giving a teleclass on December 1st entitled Strategies for Improving Hand Hygiene Compliance in the ICU. I would certainly encourage you to register for that one. One last thing before we go. If anyone who's listening has an interest maybe in going to Brazil, possibly on an exchange with some Brazilian infection control nurses who might come here, I would very much like to hear from you. This is just an idea that we've been bantering around, and if somebody thinks that it might be useful for them to go and spend some time, it doesn't need to be a long time, but spend a little while in Brazil working with the infection control departments there to find out how they do what they do, I would like to hear about that to see if there is any interest. So thank you again to all of you who participated. I'd like to make a special thanks to our speakers who took the time and effort to put together their slides and to give their presentations. All of them did fabulous jobs. And also on the very last slide, I'd like to again thank our sponsors who made this financially possible, Virox and Deb, 3M, Diversey, Gojo, and Ecolab. And, of course, lastly, to all of you who are listening, thank you especially because without you, there would certainly be no point. Thanks to everyone, and we'll talk again very soon. Goodbye.